This podcast was recorded Thursday, August 15th at 10:34 a.m. Things may have changed by the time you hear this. Yeah, like Vice President Kamala Harris will hold a news conference or sit for an interview with an independent journalist. Let's talk politics. This is Snollygoster, WOSU Public Media's weekly look at Ohio politics and all those Snollygosters, those shrewd politicians who come up with a great plan to fix something only when it appears their opponents will beat them to it. I'm Mike Thompson. Coming up in the podcast, Ohio Democrats can play the former name game as well. But first, Ohioans will vote in November on a plan to change the way the state draws its legislative districts. If voters approve the proposed amendment, Ohio politicians no longer will be able to pick their voters. Legislative lines would be drawn by a bipartisan independent commission rather than top elected leaders, as is the case now. Ohio's current system has led to what experts say is one of the country's most gerrymandered states. For the past decade, Republicans have enjoyed supermajorities in the state legislature because of the maps that they drew. Not surprisingly, top Ohio Republicans do not like this new plan. Governor DeWine among them, even though he sits on the redistricting commission and approved the latest maps, he says the system does not work. And 3 months before the election, he proposes a different way, a better way, he says. The governor says Ohio should adopt the Iowa system of drawing legislative and congressional districts.
I believe the Iowa system provides us with an example of a system that takes politics out of map drawing. Map draws are, under the Iowa plan, prohibited. They are prohibited from looking at past voting patterns. The Iowa system is clean, it is simple, and has been used successfully to achieve the good government objectives that we all associate with true reform.
Iowa's system does seem less political than Ohio's current system. A state agency draws the maps, and that agency is prohibited from using partisan or election data when drawing districts. There are other rules as well, but ultimately it is up to the state legislature and the governor to sign off on the maps. If they can't or won't agree, the Iowa Supreme Court draws them. So this week, let's take a closer look at what is happening in Iowa and if this plan is as good as Mike DeWine says it is. Joining me is WOSU reporter George Shilcock. Before coming to Columbus, he worked as a government and politics reporter at the Iowa City Press Citizen in Iowa City. He also worked for the Des Moines Register. George, welcome to Snollygoster.
Thanks for having me, Mike.
So, no politics at all in Iowa's redistricting system. Sounds like heaven. Is that really the case?
You know, it was kind of a breath of fresh air hearing about the how good, quote unquote, the Iowa system was when I lived there. Here in Ohio, I think a lot of people denigrate the system here, given the results that it's churned out over the past few decades. Iowa system was always called the gold standard by countless political scientists that I talked to, that the Des Moines Register talked to, and the coverage that I followed throughout the state. So it's definitely considered that, but saying there's no politics in it kind of puts a lot of trust in the politicians who actually eventually do get their hands on it and have to vote for these maps.
So there's a state agency that draws the maps. It's the state's Legislative Services Agency. It is assisted by a commission with members selected by top legislative leaders from both parties. But the commissioners cannot be political insiders. So that's similar to what the plan is here, if voters approve. There will be a commission of political outsiders, so-called.
Yeah, so the Legislative Services Agency, like you said, they're described as being nonpartisan. They are appointed by the legislature. They're overseen and oversighted by the legislature as well. And yeah, they choose what's called the advisory committee, which goes around and holds public hearings throughout the states on the proposed maps that the LSA draws. These commissioners don't draw the maps, but they do take that input and help the LSA use that input to draw the maps. Mm-hmm. It's all about like keeping the communities together. In Iowa, there are only four congressional districts right now. It's different in the past, but there are only four right now, and you can't split counties. it's different here in Ohio. Obviously, you'd have to split a county because you can't fit all of Franklin County, given its population, in one congressional district.
Yeah.
So it's a bit easier there to sort of keep communities together.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll get to some of the differences between the states because that's what the citizens, not politicians groups argue. But so you were there during one of these processes, or have you watched these hearings? I mean, how you saw the process here. I mean, it went to the Supreme Court, I don't know how many times. It got ruled unconstitutional and it was a big mess and it dragged on for months and months. Is that happening in Iowa these days?
Well, let me tell you, this COVID split screen was absolutely nuts.
Yeah, COVID was an odd time too.
Yeah. The split screen of Iowa's system being done versus ours was very, very nuts to see. But the partisanship in Iowa still exists. I think the Republicans, Democrats in the state are still fighting with each other, obviously, like we see all over the country. But when it came to this redistricting process, how it went was the first map got proposed. They sought out this input and they had that advisory committee. And it went to the legislature. Legislature chose that map to vote down first. It had one of the four districts. It had one strong blue district. It had two lean Republican districts and then one strong red district in Northwest Iowa.
Uh-huh.
They didn't want that. So they asked for a second map. And that map came through and it was three lean red, one's now more red than it was before, and then one strong red district also in Northwest Iowa where very Republican in that area. And they voted that one through. So it didn't go to the third attempt, which the third attempt is where it gets really interesting.
So it did. So the lawmakers did play a role in this, a pretty strong role. They rejected the first map.
Yes, they did. Their reasonings basically came down to, we don't like this version. We'd like to see a newer version. And they gave their input of like, hey, maybe we could group these bigger cities together. Maybe we can group this region together differently. Because I believe that blue district that I believe they were really worried about, because it's a Republican-controlled legislature. It grouped together Iowa City, where I lived. It's very liberal college town, like Athens here in Ohio, but a bit bigger. And then one of their big cities in Davenport and their other big city in Cedar Rapids.
Yeah.
And they don't like putting those cities together.
Yeah. So if you look at the congressional map, especially in Iowa, which is the easiest one to look at, it's basically Iowa is a square state, slightly rectangular, and it's basically chopped into four quadrants. If you look at the maps, now there's little lines in the middle there where they kind of snake in and out, but it's not – there's no snake on the lake. There's no seahorse district like Jim Jordan had for years ago. They look pretty compact, and that's what state law requires.
Mm-hmm. It's almost like a Des Moines swirl there to where it's all centered. They all kind of meet in the Des Moines area in the center and then break off, like you said, into those quadrants.
Yeah. And that, like you said, they're all held by Republicans now, but three of them of the four seem relatively competitive. Like a Democrat could be at least have a stronger chance of at least winning it or being competitive in the race.
Oh, yeah. The race that I covered specifically in Iowa, I didn't cover in 2020, but that year it was decided by 6 votes. And then coming into 2022 in the new maps, the congresswoman's name is Marionette Miller Meeks. She went from winning it by 6 votes to then winning it by 6% instead, a couple thousand votes.
Yeah.
And then the race with Des Moines was held by a Democrat before. Now it's held by a Republican instead, and it's considered the swingiest of those districts.
So that's congressional. In Ohio, the gerrymandering really comes in even more so in the state legislature. The supermajorities that the Republicans have here have really pushed legislation pretty far to the right. Is that same thing happening in Iowa?
In terms of supermajorities, no, but Republicans do still hold strong majorities there.
Which is not surprising. It's a rural state.
But like Ohio, it had a history of being a swing state not too long ago. Like it was a state.
Tom Harkin was the legendary senator there.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Tom Harkin from Cumming, Iowa.
Yeah.
Nice little town that's tripling in population right now, I think.
Yeah.
It chose Barack Obama in the caucuses and basically launched his political career to the presidency almost. So it has a history, but it's trended very red since then, like Ohio has.
So getting back to the legislature, they're not quite as – they don't lean quite as red or aren't quite as red as Ohio's?
Exactly, yes.
Mm-hmm. And that's because of the map making?
I'd say it plays a factor. Mm-hmm. If they were – if if they didn't, I think, stick to there's almost like a trust system there in this map making system where they've never had to go to the third step to where they can make amendments, draw the map themselves, and then eventually the Supreme Court could draw the map. They've never had to do that before. So it's almost like they have this trust in the system that whatever the LSA proposes, we'll vote for. So it's never taken that third step in history.
Yeah, it seems. And this has been in place for how long?
Since about 1980, 1981, I believe that's what I researched.
Wow. So it's been in place now for 40 years. And now, 3 months before the election, Mike DeWine says this is the one we should go with, even though he's been in office here for 40 years. It's interesting.
I was watching that press conference. I heard Iowa plan. My ears perked up. I was like, whoa, I know that.
Yeah. I mean, when they've had this on since Iowa is the gold standard. It's never been talked about here in Ohio before the amendment got put on the ballot. Anyway, we'll let that stand as it is. Now, Ohio is not Iowa. Both four-letter states, lots of vowels in their names. But we have 3.5 times more people than Iowa. So
a lot more trees too.
Yeah. So that has to be a different, it has to be easier to draw maps when you have fewer people.
Like I said, like you don't have to split the counties. And that's one of the big issues I feel like people take when looking at gerrymandered maps. They see like these weird lines that are drawn splitting counties between cities and stuff like that. And it gets rid of like this idea of compactness in Iowa. It looks totally compact because there's only four districts.
Yeah. I mean, we have three major cities, Cleveland, Columbus, and Cincinnati. Then we have, I mean, Dayton has to be probably as large as any large city in Iowa. I don't know what the population is of Des Moines and Iowa City.
I'd compare it to a little bit smaller than there are really two major cities in Iowa, Cedar Rapids and Des Moines.
Yep.
And I'd compare Dayton to the third, which is Davenport.
Ohio's much more diverse. So you don't have the civil rights concerns, the Voting Rights Act concerns that in Iowa that you have here.
I think it's a little different there. The diversity there is obviously a lot more white, but they have, of course, a lot more diverse populations in their big cities. Even in the smallest towns in Iowa, you'll find small towns with the majority Hispanic population because it's meatpacking towns.
Yep.
That's where a lot of immigrants are coming in to find work too. But definitely a lot more white there than it is here in Ohio.
And whoever drew the counties in Iowa had a really good ruler because it's laid out like a grid. So again, you can't really have snakes if you have to keep the counties compact and the counties are little squares within the big square of Iowa. Mm-hmm. That's a difference as well.
Oh, yeah. And there are 99 of them, which kind of irks me. I wish it was like an even 100, but
yeah. Well, it's 99. If it's easy to get a clear vote, if more than 50% plus one can support a piece of legislation. So, bottom line is that the system in Iowa seems to work.
It seems to, yeah. I think no one over there will dispute any of the maps as being gerrymandered, and it's never, like I said, gone to that third step where the legislatures can make amendments, and then eventually, if they don't reach a deadline, the Supreme Court, which is appointed by the governor, can step in and make changes to the maps too.
So it gives us hope that it can be done, whether this system in Ohio is the solution or not. But it shows that Iowa, which was a swing state, now definitely red, can do it, and other states can do it as well.
I think the Iowa plan comes down to whether you can trust politicians. And I think a lot of people and the advocates for citizens, not politicians, would argue that Ohioans don't at this moment.
And the supermajority, I think what happens when states get into trouble, whether it's a Democratic state or a Republican state, when there is a supermajority in the legislature that's drawing the maps, they are loath to give up that advantage. It happened in New York State with Democrats. It happened in Michigan with Republicans in the legislature. It happens here with Republicans in the legislature. And the supermajorities is where we start to get into trouble, I think.
Yeah, we're talking about two red states here right now, Iowa and Ohio. But like you said, New York, Illinois too, they've had their own gerrymandering problems.
Yeah, it's a bipartisan issue.
Yeah.
George
Surprise, right?
Yeah, George Shilcock, reporter from WOSU, former reporter from Iowa, proud Buckeye, but he did spend a little time in Iowa.
Bobcat.
That's right, Ohio University, not Ohio State University. Go Bobcats. Thanks for joining us on Snollygoster, George.
Thank you for having me, Mike.
We'll be right back.
New from the Embedded podcast. Female athletes have always needed grit and talent. But for decades, they've also needed a certificate.
There was chit-chat about, is that really a woman?
And even now, they're still being checked and questioned. Their story is the newest series from CBC and NPR's Embedded. It's called Tested. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
Time now for our Snollygoster of the Week Award, where we honor the shrewdest politician or political move of the past 7 days. And this week it goes to the Mahoning County Democratic Party up in Northeast Ohio. Here's the backstory. Earlier this year, Ohio Republicans used the state law to try to block three transgender Democratic candidates from the ballot. State law says if a candidate for public office changes their name within 5 years of running, they have to disclose their former name. The transgender candidates did not disclose their former names. One of the candidates was blocked from being on the ballot. Two others were not. Now, as Cleveland.com reports, the chair of the Mahoning County Democrats, Chris Anderson, says newly appointed state rep Tex Fisher should be blocked from the ballot. It appears the Republican, Tex Fisher, legally changed his name from Austin James Fisher to Austin James Texford Fisher back in 2020. Even though the name change happened within 5 years of him running, he did not include his former name on documents, much like the transgender candidates' cases. Chairman Anderson told Cleveland.com, quote, if they're going to use the law to penalize trans candidates, then it needs to be applied equally. Fisher says he has gone by Tex since he was a kid, and he says it is undemocratic to kick him off the ballot on a technicality. So, for trying to use that technicality to again highlight a trivial and probably outdated state law, Mahoning County Democratic Chair Chris Anderson gets our Snollygoster of the Week Award. That will do it for this week's edition of Snollygoster, which is part of the NPR network. As always, please give us a good review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcast. Tell your friends about us. For our student producer, Katie Genius, our digital producer, Michael DeBonis, and our audio engineer, Dalton Jones, I'm Mike Thompson for Snollygoster from WOSU Public Media.